So there's my name, Manuel, and I'm coming from Berlin, where my little design studio is dealing with different kinds of tasks, mainly designing communication for cultural institutions like the Biennale Festival, the House of Electronic Arts in Basel lately. And I'm not really good in multitasking, but here, PartyPick, as I said. Before I actually really start, I wanted to show maybe my first work I did, which I liked at school in 2006 in Stuttgart. And this magazine is called Dot Doc, or I called it just Wordsinn. And it really shows my fascination for templates and user culture. And combining this fascination with cultural theories, and here we're coming again back to Deleuze. And because I was having the idea that Microsoft Word is actually embodying the character of the society of control, because it helps you moving from this environments of work, school, home very easily. You use it at home, but you use it also at work. And it helps you also to start getting a proper corporate individuality by presets and templates. So it has this fancy features, and everybody liked it and made his own invitations and things like this. And so I started to make this story, and Bill Gates is fighting against the snake, and the snake is actually the animal of this society of control, which you can read in this postscriptum at of Deleuze. So you can see I'm playing around with all these features of Microsoft Word, and having quite a lot of fun. But this work actually got into the feuilleton of some newspapers in Germany, and I thought wow, that's nice. Actually, this starts this course that you can actually combine graphic design with a cultural theory. And this is my first work in 2006, and it shows actually what importance templates and presets have in our design culture. So this talk is called Slipping Through Templates, and I guess what I can contribute to the discourse of or discussion about subversive opportunism is maybe some ideas about design and user culture of today. And it's mainly communication which happens over the internet, which is internet aware, I would say, this term. And so I'm focusing on templates and their important role in our communication. So to say, the template as the face, the beautiful or the ugly face of the power structures Victoria was talking about. And also the emerging question is how actually to overcome the restrictions of these templates and find this kind of gaps to slipping through them and expressing a different view. And and I think mainly affirmative strategies are doing this, because if you are deconstructive, you don't use the template anymore. You use another format. But affirmative strategies, as we can see, overusing this format. And there, I wanna talk a little bit about my slippery design ideas. And I wrote the slippery design manifesto mindset or concept over the last years. And mainly The idea of slippery design is that design is very referential, and you're trying always to balance the order of the informations you get. And in the best case, you have like a very open design work, which gives a lot of freedom to interpret, and we will see some stuff. So this is the classic notion of traditional design, and I took it from Adorno. So the beauty comes from one force, which is aesthetics, and the other is like function. And my idea was actually that no, like my beauty is it comes from a signifiers cluster. That means like lots of references and like an openness in design, which you have through an activation of the recipient. And so the result is quite slippery because nobody really can tell you what it actually means. But this openness for me is like the ideas and the knowledge production. This is the beauty which can design actually bring us. And so to say, like a little definition of like the slippery design, it's here, defies balance and order, leads into the void and shows its worlds. Slippery design creates fields of meaning, mimesis and relationship, building lines to oppositions. Slippery design masters the game of semiotic scraps. It speaks in syllables and not sentences. Slippery design relies on dissemination, irritation, mutation, causes discourses to falter. So this is like my idea of design. You shouldn't maybe believe it, but I think it might be interesting. And there are some other terms which I like developed, and the one is like feedback. And feedback is describes actually like a very fast potential of feedback. And because nowadays everybody is very super quick in joining a discourse by just clicking or commenting or sharing or remixing content. And so feedback means more or less also that there is pure knowledge about templates and design tools. And the other term is lost in connotation. And lost in connotation means for me, as you can also hear, it's a state which I pretty much admire, and it challenges the recipient in decoding communication and associate different ideas and making his own conclusion. And lost in connotation helps you deconstruct actually communication and stimulates like a self-referential thinking because you can deconstruct it. And this is at the end, what I'm trying to lay out here is that the people's design awareness, there's also a big potential of understanding self-references in media and communication by certain design decisions, as you can see here, and which is quite important for like an affirmative opportunistic strategy. So talking a little bit about this feedback thing, and when I'm talking about feedback, I'm thinking about the contemporary user who is not only extremely sensitive to visual codes, connected to technology, digital life, the web, he's also in a position to establish communication over diverse networks, penetrate microcosms, and potentially reach the masses very quick. Brett Trömmel, a guy from New York, calls him also Estelite, a visual artist, writer, musician, distinguished primarily by his rapid production, very fast, and by the way he creates his own self-mythology. The goal is to generate the greatest possible amount of attention across online platforms, as you can see here, to achieve constant output on the web and inspire the ongoing rehashing of works, because only by rehashing the work gets actually real and become real. So he says also, for Estelites, the point of their work is not only what it expresses, but the speed at which it's expressed. So it's very important that, yeah, like this collage, probably like this girl, Jeanette Hayes, had it like in 1 second, and she, I just photoshopped this prince into this picture, and yeah, Tilda is kissed by this prince, and like this was just like this little idea, and after 5 minutes, people liked it and we shared it. So like this movement kind of has the idea that the masterpiece is over. It's about the speed, like lots of works instead of one big work. And a popular format for the rapid production is a meme, and a term which was introduced a good 40 years ago by Richard Dawkins in The Selfish Gene. I think probably you know all about this term, and it's defined as a unit carrying cultural ideas that evolves through natural selection, variation, mutation, and so the meme is in a constant struggle to survive, for survival. It's like the gene, like the biological gene, and it strives for attention, and it just as dependent on connecting communications as it is changed by them. So it needs the communication to live on. There's a video in the background. So two ideas I found interesting about it, actually, and you can see this here, temporary autonomous zone, in a term which is in this book by Hakim Bey, T8Z. And it's a concept of a short-lived utopian place that evades the traditional dynamics of law and hierarchy. So the me might be such a place that offers fertile ground for a design practice that can and wants to follow different rules and communicate like own ideas, which are maybe not possible in like in a other realm of like very strict design decisions, like a template might have. And so that's why the meme got quite political. And at the same time, the meme lives mostly on the notion of irony and banality, and that's the people see that very critically. So the joke gets quite important in the visual communication. But there's why jokes and why not? Jokes are low budget. Governments the world over are fortifying themselves against their own citizens, and most of all against their jokes. But jokes easily pass through the walls of fortresses. The joke is an open source weapon of the public. As you can see here also, like Obama gets lots of shit. And that's actually like pretty dangerous for any politicians if there is like a, how you call it, shitstorm or whatever going on. And the meme is one of the formats. So some words about the lost in connotation, which is the other part. Like we have the feedback, which is like this fast feedback potential, and then we have like the reflective part, which is lost in connotation. And like being lost starts a reflection and could move you to explore things, searching new connections, trying to balance is a challenge which keeps you always awake. So this is the reason I prefer quite this referential design, and there's this guy Klaus Krippendorf, and he calls it the form follows meaning formula. And form may not follow function but meaning, which brings the user back into the picture and strongly suggests that designers need to discuss not only the context in which their forms are used, but also how these forms are made sense of what they mean to someone other than themselves. In practice, different models may call for layered semantics that enables users to penetrate through the simple and literally surface appearance to deeper and deeper levels of understanding. So this is what I mean, like it should be very many, like, deep, like many layered. And like, because here are many architects, it also reminds you probably about the first ideas Venturi had 10 years before, where he compared the duct to the decorated shed and was really pushing the discourse into like an architecture of meaning, actually, and not the expressionist architecture of the modernism. And so I think that's, of course, very postmodern, but it fits pretty much in our times where we can really have access to lots of imagery and different articles and contents. So how does this look? I mean, what is like the slippery design? And I can't really tell you that's a style or something. It's just like, an idea and like a referential game. And this is the corporate or like the festival design of the Transmediali two years ago, actually. And probably today I wouldn't do it like this, but at this time it quite fitted pretty well. So the festival is BWPWAP, and it talks about the recontextualization, because back when Pluto was a planet, and Pluto was like this rejected as from his planet status and got back into this dwarf planet status in 2006, I think. So this recontextualization of like the state of the planet state. Therefore, I use the template of the meme. Because this is the same thing, like the meme, you have a picture and you just write something above it and you recontextualize it very easily. So it has this very strict corporate where you have like the impact font, the white font with the black outline, and then there's like on many other layers different narratives, like this post like before after thing. Like here you can see the same planet, but it's after before, but the notion is on before and not on after. And so also here on the back of this flyer you have lots of references to the whole Earth catalog, which is also like this recontextualization from the 60s and 70s and so on. And also here on the book, actually, you can see on the top, on the bottom, it says on the spine, it says TLDR, which means like too long, didn't read. So all this internet lingo is involved there. And also, if you open it, this book is not to be taken from the library. So it also reflects back on his like situation as an media object. And what I really like is actually like this feature, which is on the side of the book, and you can see it here, and it says that at first I was like, but then I was like. And so also like this connotation of Pluto, and it comes from this mean, like at first I was like, but then I was like, which was quite popular at this time. So now we have like this thing which I wanted to have. It's like we have this feedback culture. But we have also like, at least not, of course not everybody, but some people maybe have all sometimes this idea of lost in connotation and like too much references. What does it mean actually? And for me, it means like you starting to get more and more design awareness. And 3 points maybe to summarize this. Can you just tell me how much means that? 15, I have time for. So the first one is like sensitization through democratization. Means like when I started with Microsoft Word, maybe this was the first step, but also you can see today in much bigger scales. I don't know if it's bigger scales, but like maybe like a bigger outcome. It's like, of course, like Apple or something like this. So here you see the opening of Apple Store in Shanghai, and the thing is like by involving yourself into a designed world, you automatically learn how to design. The democratization of design culture is happening through accessible design tools, which is true today. A knowledge of and sensitization to design and its role in our lives is now attended by know-how in visual culture. So that means we are used to make design decisions. And we're having like an individual design practice, everybody of us. So the demystification of design software is complete. Like it's not a big thing to make like a collage in Photoshop. Like you learn it more or less in the kindergarten. And the second point would be like self-design and design reflection, which is Boris Groys writes about in Self-Designing in 2008, and he says, by designing oneself and one's environment in a certain way, one declares one's faith in a certain values, attitudes, programs, ideologies. And young authors like, again, Brett Rommel, for example, he just says, like, this is online brand making. So I'm making my own brand online. And you can see here in this Facebook profile thing that, like, people actively engaging with the template and trying to play with it. And yeah, this is like the design thinking or the design reflection. And then we have another point, which is like bottom up versus top down. And you can see here at this picture, and there's like a quote of Olya Lialina, like a web pioneer. And she says, like, this new kind of type of general purpose users can write an article in their email client, lay out their business card in Excel, and shave in front of a webcam like this guy here. And so it says, like, you are really, you know how to use all these features you got. Like, even if it's top down or bottom up, you know how to use it. It's, and it is also like very interesting in an aesthetically way, because you have once like this very sleek aesthetics of Apple, for example, and this nice shadows and drop shadows. And then you have like this super roughness of your own mobile video still. And like this very, very heterogeneous world of design, people get more aware of it. They can immediately say, okay, this is like an amateur video. And that makes it, of course, sometimes also very dangerous, because like people faking this aesthetic to have it like authentic or something like this. So yeah, this is like another point, which is like summarizing my idea of design awareness. And in general, you can say users increasingly approach design with the expectation of having to fill in blanks and actively insert content. And I think that's pretty right. Like, everybody tries to fill in something in this template and make it proper and send it to someone. And visual culture nowadays significantly defines in this participative approach, of course. But there's like lots of discussion about this participative, and we had it yesterday already, and I think it's probably also a topic of today. It's, yeah, what do you want if the quality is missing in like a participative discussion? And what I also wrote, read in the, like, in some article, is that actually 0.17% of all YouTube users are only participating by uploading videos. So, like, the idea of like participation in the web is, of course, maybe happening in Facebook, but this is not the, this is like a, anyways, like a widescreen or something. Like, this is not the interesting part. And this is where things got distributed, but are not emerging. Okay, slipping through templates. And more or less, as you can see also here by this more or less hack of the template of Instagram, we connect, communicate, and share like our lives depend on it. And as increasingly they in fact do. And I started to put some theory of Henri Lefebvre on this template culture, because I thought it maybe fits pretty well. And so for Lefebvre, the social space, or the third space, is directly lived through its associated images and symbols. And that's why, I mean, he's very concerned about it, because he says there's a global capitalistic determination of space and a homogenization of space. As you can really see here outside the art center, like the shopping street, I was very shocked that it looks like shopping streets in every other city in Europe as well, kind of. And this is the thing, like, this is the determination, and this is also in the web, actually. So I show you two projects. First, this is the idea, that, like, so space shapes society, and society produces space, like this bipolar idea. And now I say, no, templates shape society, and society produces templates. So let's see if this could be right. And there's this one example, and you see I tried yesterday to make a new night ID. And this template I could use, like for designing, it's very nice, but at the same time, when it comes to the Tong top ID, where I can put my own signature on, like MB would be totally fine. But if I would try to do something with hate, it says, sorry, the ID you've entered does not fit within our guidelines. Please enter a new ID. And you try with Obama and it doesn't really, it's not possible. And also if you try to to play with them, like you make like Adi Das or something, like, it's not working. Like they are pretty well prepared for these cases. And so there you can see this is the case where like the template shaped the society. And then there's this project of David Horvitz, and he has this public access, and he traveled from Los Angeles, or like down, like up or down the west coast of California, and made like on 50 beaches pictures in this kind of Caspar David Friedrich mood, and uploaded it on Wikipedia, and for like every kind of beach. And what happened is that there was a discussion on Wikipedia, or like outside of the Wikipedia. Hey, this guy, he's fucking annoying. He puts himself always into the picture. Like, this is not good. And then they actually took the picture, like removed him out, or like recutted it and uploaded it again. And so I was thinking, okay, this is where the society actually of control maybe gets back again, because this template thinking, like everything should be proper, and like it hits us like by people who are really thinking like they know how it should be. So this is I think like maybe an example where like templates society produces templates more or less. And so this is the triangle where I try also to investigate much more for this for the essay, which I probably will write about this theme. And so it's like the template, the object-oriented design pattern. It's like the control, which we had always in the discussion here, and it's the user. And there's like another nice example, I think, of this woman, Claire Wick, and she tricked like both now. She tricked Nike, and she tricked maybe also like the template idea. And she was running in San Francisco, I think, and was using this Nike Plus program and started to paint figures. But she got very famous by painting penises. And I think that's quite nice, especially the right one, when I see also the interface of Nike, way to run it, how did you feel? And I think she doesn't know what she did, but she did like a pretty well subversive, opportunistic work. And and this is for me always like a good sign that like the user is still on top of it, kind of. And maybe for the end I show the trailer of the last Transmediali, because here we played also like with this very corporate world, this kind of stock imagery, and in the topic of like this post-digitality. So here you go. Maybe we need some proper sound for this. Achtung. Thank you. this trailer, which was before every event, like very, very different reactions on it. So some people really loved, and some people got really like goosebumps and were afraid of it, kind of this. And yeah, this is like, it gives you really this uneasiness feeling of technology and like distributed pictures over like really cheap picture sites like Shutterstock or something like this. But also, of course, it yeah, tells you about like this template still, this also the type centered like a watermark kind of thing. So yeah, this is the slipping through template excursion, which I hope gives you maybe some ideas about the subversive opportunistic way of living or something. And yeah, we can go on.
Like how something can be understood in different aspects depending on how elaborate something is. Would that be the same as the slippery?
Is it like an ambiguity kind of thing? Like you, it has like many meanings, or did I?
Yeah, it has a lot of meanings. I mean, everything has a lot of meanings. Some has more meanings than others. And also, some allows for more interpretation than others. So, I mean, a template would initially, I think, be used in the right direction, but the slippery template would be open for many interpretations.
Yeah, I have no idea how the slippery template is, probably because it's like an open, probably like an open source template. But yeah, or maybe not actually, maybe it just gives you more possibilities or something. Yeah, as I said, like there's not like the slippery design is for me just like a term to also to explore design and not like a style or something. So I have no idea how things look if they are slippery or not. Like slippery can be also very minimal, but it can be all very complex as well. Mm-hmm.
But do you think this, in terms of, how do you reflect this in terms of ready-made objects and the post Duchamp era, or because it fits very well in that kind of thing, in that kind of tradition, I would say. I mean, how do you think of your work in that way?
Like ready-made or?
As found concept?
Yeah, maybe it fits sometimes. Like the clip at the end. Of course, it was maybe like 1 hour of work selecting some videos. It was not a big thing. But then other stuff is like maybe too complex for being just like a ready-made. Like you have to choose the right composition and like it gets more to the term of collage or something. And,
I was maybe we can have this bigger discussion afterwards, but this how it connects to the concepts and ideas of the attention economy, for instance. I'm sure you are aware of this, but this is kind of interesting when you talk about this of the being fast and about distribution and so on, and that it's about what is in what we are. The lack is not like products or images and so on. That's an endless supply. But what is like people's eyes and concentration and attention towards something. And now that also is completely incorporated in I don't know, I mean in the Nike. This, you know, instead of buying new shoes, I spend like half an hour doing some sort of design.
Yeah, yeah, but so you end up always...
brand, it's like a time-wise...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the template in general, I think it's like a pretty much capitalistic form of keeping up the stream and like all the time. So that there's not like this pause of information.
Yeah.
You are so quick in like making a message, it doesn't hurt, like, yeah, it's so easy. And like even if you're saying, we had this discussion, I think, on the table, like, you know, like just liking something.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah.
I mean, I think there's something nice in the connection between what you said and this condition of perpetual crisis that you were describing. Because for me, when I see this, I mean, the beauty of what I like to think of as being like neoliberal smooth, which is the stock photography, the whole world is smooth. Everything is perfectly lit, everything is, you know, perfectly racially and culturally and economically in harmony. And when you see it, it's so uncanny, precisely because that's not the reality of it. But by having this constant flow of information, it gives you no possibility to react. And something that I'll talk about later on is the slippage of time in neoliberalism, the way in which it exploits the dimension of time. But I mean, the more information you have, this constant bombardment means that there is no possibility to react, and there is no possibility for long-term thought. And it's a kind of, in fact, a kind of perpetual exploitation of the individual. And that's why when I see this stock footage, you know, it's so smooth, it's so perfect, it shows you immediately how uncanny this constant flow of information is.
Yeah. No, yeah, totally. And if you go even like more, talking about speed, like that you try today also to control your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is a new thing.
Yeah.
Like having these models of, okay, I sleep 3 times a day for 1 hour or whatever, like different kind of ideas, that you are keeping up the attention and being part of the attention economy, because this is the thing, you have to work like for 16 hours, otherwise you're out of the game.
But I also, I mean, the template for me is also, and what you were describing is also a kind of mechanism of like market saturation. I mean, if you look at the way in which different populations are mobilized at different periods in history in order to reach a larger segment of market saturation.
Mm.
So in the 19th century, only men can vote, you only sell things to men. Suddenly people realize maybe we can sell things to the other half of the population. Women become mobilized. And then it becomes children, and then it becomes the division of children into the invention of the teenager, and then it becomes the ethnic minority, and then it becomes the gay community. And you're constantly trying to reach 100% saturation of the market. And in order to do that, you have to constantly split apart identity groups in order to refocus a product, which, as we described before, is both simultaneously extremely specific and increasingly homogenous and generic.
Mm.
And that's precisely what the template does, and what the, if you like, the industrial bespoke or the mass-produced customizable Nike ID does. It allows you to, on the one hand, have the impression that you have created something which is individual, and therefore you have a kind of ownership and investment in the product, while in fact, you know, it's a totally kind of generic template solution.
Yeah. I mean, in this discussion, it's also lately it came up. It's like more in a contemporary, let's say, like yaw of pop culture term, it's like this norm core.
Sure.
Where you try to like get rid of this idea that it's specific, and like for the mass it's just norm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But norm core as well, I mean norm core, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this concept. It's kind of like very popular in kind of like Williamsburg and Brooklyn. And it's the idea that, you know, everyone looks like Jerry Seinfeld. You dress as though to be like ultra banal, ultra normal, completely unremarkable. And in a way, it's like, at least for me, this is an attempt to make yourself invisible to big data. Because as soon as you express a preference, that preference can be logged, categorized, and exploited in order to sell you something else. So by, in a way, concealing yourself at the ultimate apex of the normative curve, you make yourself invisible. I mean, you know, I because I just recently wrote quite quite a lot about Nongkrom, my main criticism of it would be that this invisibility is not the same as resistance. And in a way, this kind of subversion, I think this is a very important distinction, is subversion is not necessarily the same as dissidence.
Yeah. No, I see this as also, like, I had a talk to some guy, like, actually the editor of Over32C, and he said, like, and Jörg said, like, oh, no, that's over, like, subculture is over, and I said, like, no, this is the thing, subculture is important, because this is where identity is, and where, like, thinking comes together, and, like, yeah, this is the clash, yeah. Mm-hmm.